The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Most Americans could look in their medicine cabinet where they will find medication prescribed by a doctor that they use on a daily basis and have available to them because the FDA engaged in a process of determining the efficacy and safety of that medication. Mifepristone is no exception to that process.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Whew, that's Kamala Harris. Maggie just said in my headset, really? I remember speaking with Eric Scheidler a couple weeks ago about that particular drug. Wow. You heard earlier in the broadcast, I started today sharing a little bit about another pro-life pregnancy center that was damaged, right? Windows, seven windows were broken. Somebody sprayed graffiti all over it. You know, they signed it saying Jane was here, talking about Jane's revenge. I'm not sure how many that takes since the Dobbs decision was leaked. I should probably go back and do a quick search on that. Dobbs was what, leaked in May of last year? It's got to be over 100, I want to say 130, 100 maybe, I don't know, 70. It's up there. I mean, you're talking about, I want to go with 130 for abortion clinics. I know churches are up there. It's either 70 churches and 130 crisis pregnancy centers, or those numbers are reversed. I don't have the data in front of me here. But it's continuing. And last week, the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, he told the Senate Judiciary hearing, or the committee, I should say, that the FBI is as committed to finding the perpetrators of those acts as they are to sending armed agents to Mark Houck's house, you know, at 6:45 a.m. in the morning to arrest this pro-life counselor outside over a minor scuffle. Yeah, well, I'll believe it when I see it. I mean, yeah, I'm sure you are. I mean, 30 guys go to this guy's home. His poor kids and wife are terrorized. He's drug out of his home like he's some sort of, you know, horrible criminal. He didn't throw stuff through, any abortion clinic's windows. He didn't graffiti the place. You know, he didn't, you know, threaten the organization. He was out there with his kid, right? He happened to push back somebody who got too close to his kid. I heard Ted Cruz say, it'd just be a simple, you know, misdemeanor charge. Why are you going with 30 armed guards and putting this guy in chains and leg irons for most of the day? The Attorney General said that, you know, the people who are firebombing and damaging these pro-life clinics, well, they're doing it at night. They're doing it in secret. You know, if you want my opinion, he admitted, you know, right there that the FBI is, you know, they're doing the best they can, but it's nighttime. He made some weird remark like that. Bottom line is this. Look, the FBI, and I hate the broad brush because, like I said, I know certain agents. They're not all bad, right? But clearly, they look like they're either incompetent or they're biased right now when it comes to those who are pro-life. And you even see a discriminatory perspective when it comes to churches. I mean, where are the arrests there as well? The pro-abortion activists are trying to shut down pro-life pregnancy centers. Why? These are centers that are helping mothers in need. They're handing out diapers, right? They're giving them formula. They're helping a woman. They don't want the alternative. They want to shut down pro-life pregnancy centers. And you know how they do it? They don't do it by protesting or praying or doing something peaceful outside of it. They do it with violent acts. That's how they do it. That's their MO. And the state of Illinois is going to try to do it through the law. And this is what I want to talk to you about, because I'm telling you, I think this is part of that final battle that Sister Lucia talks about. I mean, Satan is out to destroy the family. This is diabolic at its heart. There's been a bill that's introduced in the state of Illinois. It's entitled the Deceptive Practices of Limited Services Pregnancy Centers Act, which Illinois Right to Life dubbed the Forced Abortion Information Act. And what's it about? The bill would require pregnancy centers to tell their clients that they can get an abortion. You know, it would also allow the state attorney general's office to investigate it. Will any pregnancy center that they suspect isn't giving out information about where to obtain an abortion? It also would allow anyone to sue them. They can sue these centers if they believe they violated the terms of this bill. And there's no limit at all to the damages that they can claim. So now you know what I know when it comes to this bill. And if this bill passes, there'll be women who will fan out across, I think, the state to try and entrap these centers. So they'll be closed down. The battle will just continue. And we're seeing it on many different levels. I'm joined today by Marian Fiorito, Mary Hallin Fiorito, I should say. She's an attorney and the Francis Cardinal George Fellow at both the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington and the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame, a longtime contributor to the network. You'll hear her on Morning Air frequently. I think she's a regular with John and his team in the morning. We asked her to stop by just to give us a quick update on what's happening here. And Mary, it's good to have you back. Thanks.
Oh, Drew, thanks so much. It's great to be with you again.
You know, I know you're an attorney. Help me understand this. I don't know how much more spiteful this bill can get. This would allow the attorney general to basically make up any excuse to investigate and shut down these centers. Is this even constitutional? I mean, that's where I'm coming from. I mean, yeah. What is the limit to that power?
Well, it's right. I mean, there is no limit to it. That's exactly right, Drew. And it's hard even to know where to begin, first of all, with this particular introduced bill that's been introduced in both the Illinois House and the Senate. They're identical bills. But just with Illinois in general, now, unfortunately, we have a supermajority of Democrats in both houses, in both the Senate and the House, and, of course, Governor J.B. Pritzker, who is among the most pro-abortion elected officials in the United States today, and he has presidential aspirations, but virtually anything the abortion industry has asked him for in the last 4 years, he has given them, including overturning the Parental Notification of Abortion Act, which was supported by almost 75% of Illinois voters. And what that law did was simply to require abortionists and abortion clinics to tell the parents, either a parent or a guardian, of a minor girl who was undergoing an abortion. The parent or guardian did not have to give permission. All they had to do was to notify the parent or the guardian to tell them, we are going to be doing either a surgical or chemical abortion on your minor child.
Wow.
And again, this had almost, you know, not just a majority, but a supermajority of Illinois residents and certainly Illinois parents absolutely agreed with this law. It was very common sense. You know, if nothing else, we have a pro-life OBGYN friend I know who's been a guest on your show who was telling me he works at a hospital that doesn't do abortions, but he had he has to do emergency room, you know, routes every month or so. He has to take an emergency room overnight shift. And he had a 15-year-old girl who was brought in by her mother because she started running a very high fever about, you know, 24 or 48 hours after she'd had an abortion. The mother knew she had had it. And it turns out they had left pieces of the baby inside of her. It was an incomplete abortion. And she was quite close to going into septic shock. So, you know, he uses that. He said, if for no other reason, even if the abortion is going to go forward, parents should be able to monitor their minor girls for complications, which can and do happen after both surgical and chemical abortions. But, you know, we managed to hold it off for the first session after it was introduced. But then, you know, the abortion industry is just so well-funded here, Drew, and Governor Pritzker signed it immediately. He signed it on the Friday afternoon before Christmas at 4 o'clock in the afternoon when he knew, and the bill was voted on 2 days earlier at about 11:30 at night when they knew they have to do everything they're doing under the you know, cloak of darkness because they know the majority of voters don't approve. And this would be very similar. Like, you know, I was talking to a friend who is a historian. He was telling me, you know, it's sort of like Hitler and the Third Reich in Nazi Germany. It wasn't enough for them just to close down the Catholic churches and the Lutheran churches. Right. They turned them into brothels as well. Yeah. So it's not enough that they have in Illinois now, Drew, it is legal to have an abortion at any time in a woman's pregnancy for any reason whatsoever. Parents will not be notified and taxpayers pay for them, for almost all of them. We have almost complete taxpayer funding of abortion because of the a particular clause in Medicaid that, you know, increases services for women who are pregnant. So we have just, you know, we have four or five new abortion clinics in the last few years that have been built along the Illinois border with Wisconsin, with Indiana, with Missouri, with Kentucky, and, you know, and now this. So it's so this is really of interest, not just to your listeners here in Illinois, but to any of the states that border Illinois and even beyond, because any man, any, you know, man can bring your minor daughter to an abortion clinic in Illinois, and no one needs to tell you.
Explain that, though. I mean, unpack that a little bit more for me, because I sit here as a father. You know, thank God my daughters are older now. They're young women, but it's, you know, in school, I mean, my kids, they couldn't get an aspirin, you know, without permission from the parents, right? And you're right. Some boyfriend, some abuser, somebody else takes this 15-year-old girl who's underage, who is pregnant, right? To an abortion clinic, and the parents may never know. And yet their child suddenly starts cutting or having suicidal ideations or going off the rails. And the parents are wondering, what's wrong with my child? I mean, that's just a scenario. I mean, I'm just saying, how does this become a reality that, you know, the state could take that much power from the parents and not have to tell them? I don't understand that.
Well, it's, you know, it's just one of these things where I think a lot of voters simply have too much else on their minds. And to understand what's going on in the Illinois General Assembly, they tend to do these things very quickly. You know, if they have the money to be able to sort of push their way through, you know, with different kinds of advertising and what have you. And we were just sort of a very strong and mighty but underfunded band of people. We managed to hold them off, and we got what we were able to do through a lot of very providential connections was to get a sex trafficking survivor who had been, kidnapped and then gang raped when she was 11. And then she was trafficked through most of her teenage years. She was taken by her traffickers to three different states where there were not parental involvement laws. And so she testified in our behalf. She begged Governor Pritzker not to sign that bill, and he signed it anyway. And, you know, I guess this is just sort of, you know, it is a moral obligation to vote. I mean, I know that you've addressed that on this show. And this is why, because if we don't have people showing up at those polls, the same kind of people are going to be getting elected who do not listen to the will of the people. So, again, I'm not talking about, you know, a law that restricts all abortions for any reason. I'm talking about a law that, again, a super majority of the voters in this state wanted to see stay intact. But this is where we are, Drew. It's just it's very demoralizing. But, you know, at least with, you know, this new bill here that you've been, you know, that you've introduced and you're giving me the privilege of speaking about. What it's trying to do, again, is they're not just content with the fact that we are the largest or one of the states with the largest number of abortions and, you know, a number of abortion clinics in the country. Now they want to make sure that women who want to choose life don't have the opportunity to do that.
It's
insane. And, you know, I've been on the board of a pregnancy center for almost 25 years. And we have two maternity homes associated with our centers. And I could tell you story after story that would just absolutely inspire you about some of the women who have come to us in desperate situations, some of them, and who have lived with us for a couple of years at our center, who have gone on to lead productive lives, who love their children, and who have beautiful children, and are so glad that they came to a pregnancy center instead of being sent to an abortion clinic for an abortion.
Yeah, no kidding. One of the greatest mistakes I think anyone would ever make. And again, I always say to the woman who did make the mistake, God does love you. And, you know, just turn to him. Ask for his mercy. And that's the beauty also of these pregnancy crisis centers. I mean, they're there to just say to the woman, hey, we do care about you. We do love you. You're not alone. You know, there's help. To mandate that they have to now say, hey, by the way, you can get your abortion, though, down here. I mean, boy, what a mess. Let me take a call or two. We can continue this conversation as well. You can join us if you want. The number is 888-914-9149. Feel free to sound off and share your own perspective. Pete is in Chicago. He's got a comment for you, Mary. Hi, Pete. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Drew. I'm a little frustrated with what I'm hearing because, you know, a couple months ago, there was a man named Darren Bailey who I wish you guys would have got political and put him on the air. Yeah. He's not a Catholic, but he's more Catholic than I know. I know the guy personally. Yeah. He's more Catholic than I know Catholics. I mean, the guy was being crucified because he was a pro-life. The media was crucifying him. Why couldn't you guys get him on?
First of all,
bothers me a little bit. I mean, why can't you guys get a little political?
Let me explain it to you.
What if you're going to lose your... I know you're old because you can't...
So you answered the question, Pete. You got it. I share your passion. Believe me, I understand. I am a strong proponent of anyone who's pro-life. We need pro-life individuals in government, you know, because if you don't get them, you see what the culture of death ultimately does. But Relevant Radio has certain boundaries. I mean, we're restricted you know, by our 50 by our nonprofit status, so to speak. And Mary, you know this as well, right? I mean, FCC licenses can be compromised. Relevant Radio could lose. You know, we can't allow somebody to campaign. We can talk about principles. Right. We could talk about issues. We can't endorse a particular candidate. But I'll let you chime in as well because you're an attorney. You can say.
Well, just to Pete's point, Darren Bailey is a wonderful man and was a wonderful candidate. He was a state senator from downstate Illinois, and you know, Illinois is one of those states where when you get outside of the Chicago area, it's a very, very different place. You have a lot of people who are farmers, as Darren Bailey is. A lot of them have accents that sound very much like Southern accents because they're in Southern Illinois. So it's a whole different type of life and type of people that are in Southern Illinois. And Darren, again, a state senator, was very popular, very much respected. And, you know, he came up here in Chicago to campaign, and my husband and I had the privilege of taking him around our community and trying to introduce him to people. But, you know, J.B. Pritzker is a billionaire. Mm-hmm. And in these kinds of elections, unfortunately for Darren Bailey, J.B. Pritzker was able to sort of categorize him very, very early on, you know, as an extremist. And, you know, you couldn't turn on a radio or a television or even go on YouTube to watch a video without some ad for J.B. Pritzker popping up. And this is unfortunately where millionaires and billionaires, you know, can buy elections. And I think that's what happened to Darren Bailey. I think, unfortunately, he was kind of pigeonholed and really mischaracterized as being a racist and a bigot, all of things which he is not. He's a very devout Christian, you know, begins his, you know, every on the you know, campaign bus, he and all of his campaign workers began the day every day with prayer. So I share Pete's, you know, frustration over that, because he was a good candidate. He loved the people of his state. He wanted to do the right thing by Illinois parents. You know, he was very frustrated with not only the parental notice bill, but also with the lack of school choice for children who live in, you know, in the poorer areas of Illinois.
Mary, you know what I got wrong, you know, during the midterm elections in particular? You know, I really thought that all of these candidates that were camping out on abortion, they were all, you know, they're going to take your rights away. They're going to do, I thought that's such a dead message. You know, people are paying 70% more for eggs. The cost of their gasoline in their car has doubled and tripled in some places. It's just absolutely ridiculous. People can't make ends meet, and you're talking about whether or not you can still, you know, have an abortion. I thought that was such, and I was wrong. I mean, in retrospect, I look back, there was ads ad nauseum, you know, promoting how sacrosanct and how important it was to keep the right to kill a child, you know, forefront. I sit back here and I don't have answers for certain things, and it frustrates me. I'm like, I don't understand the mindset. Is that more important than economics? Is that more important? What is it about death, this culture of death, that is so sacred to the left?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's a whole doctoral dissertation, true. But you know, I would actually push back a little on that sentiment you just shared, because it's not entirely true. If you look at the states, for example, in Texas, Governor Abbott was handily reelected. J.D. Vance was elected. I mean, there were really good, strong pro-life candidates who, unlike some of the other candidates, they punched back, so to speak, and they said no. Let's talk about extremism. You're extreme. You think that we should be able to abort babies after viability with no anesthesia simply because they're not convenient. They really pushed back and exposed the abortion industry for what they were. And in those states and in those races where that happened, the pro-life candidates won.
Well, it's a good point, and let's expand on that point then. You think the failing of candidates who got beat, they shied away from the life issue, and I've said it when John Kerry was running for president, Bailey, any of these candidates, I think you camp out and unapologetically say I want to defend life from the moment of conception through life, and make that there, and then camp out also in your other principles. That's key. But I did think a lot of these candidates were afraid to wave that pro-life banner, and as a result of it, it's a problem. I talked about CPAC yesterday too, and I don't think they discussed the issue of life in the past two conventions. So, you know, I think that's a losing tactic, but your perspective.
Yeah, well, you know, that's interesting. One thing I have been saying sort of consistently in all the talks I've given since Dobbs is there is a lot of consensus about abortion in the United States. There really is. And you can look at any poll. You look at Pew, you look at AP's polls, at Gallup, at Marist, any of the polls that have been done in, say, the last 18 months, both pre and post-Dobbs. And what you have is about 17 to 18% of the general population in the United States who say that they want what Roe made legally possible, mm-hmm. which is abortion for all 9 months for any reason whatsoever. So along with China and North Korea mm-hmm. and Cuba, we were in one of only seven countries in the world that permitted elective abortions through the entirety of pregnancy. Most of Europe would restrict, and most Americans would restrict abortion to about 12 weeks, and even a majority of those people would restrict it to about 6 weeks. Is that where we are morally? No, but that sure would reduce a lot of abortions, right? I mean, we could begin with those consensus points, and then somebody who is a person of faith would say, listen, this is not what my faith teaches. I'm not there morally, but I realize I live in a democracy, and I can only get what the people of this state or this town or whatever feels comfortable drawing the line at. And, you know, John Paul made this clear in Evangelium Vitae, right, that you could, that incremental legislation was morally permissible if you could not advocate or pass a stronger pro-life law. So I don't think those people really understood or tapped into what is a lot of consensus because, you know, the majority of Americans don't believe in abortion for sex selection. They don't believe in abortion after viability. They don't believe that taxpayers should be funding abortion. So hone in on those points where there is a lot of agreement. Start there. And then we have to work to build up the culture of life that John Paul also spoke so beautifully of, right?
Yeah. And we're seeing glimmers of light, too, though. I was reading this morning that Florida Republicans are proposing abortion bans beyond 6 weeks of pregnancy. And, you know, we are going to win this battle in the end, as you know. There's no doubt.
Well, the truth always wins. Yeah.
Life will win in the end. Just like slavery was a dark chapter in our history, so will this be. In generations, I've often said, we'll look back and we look at, how could you own a human being? That's insane, right? Well, what's more insane, I mean, equally as insane, is the thought you can kill a human being and lobby for it and try to advance it. So I mean, there's a blindness right now with time and some distance. I think people look back on those two great scars on this nation's history, unfortunately. The president is Catholic, as you know. Unfortunately, he is adamantly pro-death right now. If he runs again, what does that mean for the future here in the country in the fight for life?
Oh, well, I mean, he has proven himself to be, as you mentioned, just 100% committed to not just abortion, but to the most extreme wing of the pro-abortion movement in this country. I mean, publicly funded abortions. You know, abortions with absolutely no exceptions whatsoever. He has pushed to what he calls codify Roe versus Wade in federal law, which means to take that law that permitted abortion legally for all of pregnancy and to make it part of federal law so that, you know, a Supreme Court case couldn't overturn it. He is just really committed to the, you know, that very extreme wing. And again, right, we should. He knows better, right? I mean, unlike a lot of other politicians, I worry more for him because he knows better. He was not raised that way. He understands what we believe and what he knows is what the truth and science tells us about, you know, the dignity of the human person. And, you know, I think he tries to reflect that when he speaks about his care for the migrant or the poor. But for some reason in his mind, he cannot extend that to the unborn child. So he really does, you know, represent a very radical wing. I just think that at his age, I would be very surprised if he would run again. If it's possible, Kamala Harris is actually worse in terms of her views mm-hmm. and actions on abortion than he is. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure that she's really gained enough traction in terms of her popularity with the average American voter. I have a particular viewpoint on her that probably is a little bit prejudiced in that regard, but I just don't see her as somebody who's really made any inroads and that people are really excited about, not in the way people talk about Governor Ron DeSantis, for example. So
I don't know who the Dems will run if it's not Joe Biden right now. I know there's a lot of other people on the sidelines who love to get in. We'll have to see. Look, they got him elected and he never had to leave his basement. And the message of being a unifier and getting us out of the dark, cold winter of COVID and all these things was the message. You know, I think a lot of people are disenchanted that he didn't necessarily Well, he wasn't the unifier that they were hoping, and look where we are now on a lot of different levels. For me, life is always important. It's a top of the list for a lot of these candidates because everything else will ripple from that. We can grab another call or two, but before I do, let me just – I want to get you up to speed on – oh, gosh, I'm up against the clock. Let me do this, Mary. Just final thoughts, because I'm looking at the clock here. I don't have much time left. I thought I had a little more time. If this bill were to pass, just final thoughts on this. What would happen with those pregnancy centers? You know, would they shut down? And why is there such animus against such a good entity?
Well, I think it's just that anything that competes with the bottom line for abortion clinics, and let's remember, it is a multi-billion dollar a year business. And pregnancy centers cut into that business, right? Every woman who comes to a pregnancy center and decides to have her child does not go to an abortion clinic where the abortionist can make anywhere between, you know, $300 and $1,200 for that particular abortion. I doubt very much that this bill is, I know it's going to pass and I know the governor is going to sign it. There's really not much we can do, unfortunately, to stop it. But I do believe it will be enjoined. Fortunately for us, there's a Supreme Court case that was decided a few years ago, NIFLA versus Becerra. It involved some similar fact patterns with pregnancy centers in California, and the Supreme Court upheld the right of the pregnancy centers not to speak a message that the government was compelling them to speak. This case goes a little bit further, but I just don't see this law not being enjoined and not being litigated, perhaps even all the way to the Supreme Court to decide the issues that are a little bit different from the NIFLA case.
We will see what happens. Hey, thank you for your contribution today. I know you're with John a lot, and appreciate your eloquence and your passion as well. We're on the winning side. That's always good news, isn't it, Mary? I love that.
It is. Thanks for having me, Drew.
You got it. It's Mary Helen Fiorito. And coming up in just a moment, Eric Scheidler will be in studio with me. We got more to talk about. You're more than welcome to join us, too. Stay with us. I'll be right back. Today's programming is brought to you by St. Gregory Recovery Center in Iowa. More information about their faith-centered addiction treatment is available at relevantradio.com/stgregory.
Dad?
Yeah?
There's someone on the phone for you.
You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, great to be back here with you today. If you are just tuning in, just putting our finger on the pulse of, I think, one of the greatest battles of our day. I talked reparations a little bit earlier today, and that was a terrible scourge, slavery, on this country. I think we are writing a chapter that many will look back on one day and think, boy, what another horrible chapter in American history. What a great nation America is. I really believe the hand of providence was on it. And its founding and its victories, you know, and we are a great nation. I'm not here to doubt it, but when a nation can kill its own children, John Paul II says there is no hope. There is no hope. So we've got to get this issue right. Right now, besides government programs like Medicaid and state welfare, single women who become pregnant have very few programs to rely on for help. Pro-life pregnancy centers, the ones in the state of Illinois, which shut down, are major sources of helping to provide diapers and strollers and cribs and financial assistance and parenting classes, and the list goes on, but they're limited to what they can offer. So after the fall of Roe v. Wade, we had the Dobbs decision, a number of pro-life leaders, they put out a statement calling for a different approach to legislation that we've been used to for the last 50 years. I don't know if you're aware of this. This is hasn't got a lot of play, believe it or not, in the Catholic world or in the religious world. But I want to talk about it with Eric Scheidler. He's going to be in studio with me here in a quick second. We'll get him on the air. Little history. Back 1973, you know, when Roe was passed, what did we do? We focused on stopping killing children, right? And doing the things like parental notification and heartbeat pills and so on. But now that abortion has been made illegal in a lot of states, I mean, it's a real victory. I'm delighted that we can say that. Those who are leading the fight for life in the country thought, you know, we need to shift our focus. And they issued a statement called Building a Post-Roe Future. Okay, I'm going to link over to it. I want you to check it. I'll give you a website too. Building a Post-Roe Future. And I'll give you just a couple points of what they called for. They called for accessible and affordable health care for parents and children, including expanding Medicaid funding for parental care and delivery and postpartum expenses, and to reduce financial barriers to welcoming new children. They want to expand the child tax credit that promotes family formation and can get some families out of poverty. And they want paid parental leave, amongst some other things. They want flexible work hours and affordable child care options. And the list goes on. If you go to this website, you can see what they're proposing. It's called PoeRoastFuture.com. PoeRoastFuture.com. And I'm joined right now by Eric Scheidler. He actually put this on my radar. He's executive director of Pro-Life Action League, and their website is prolifeaction.org. But he's one of the leaders who signed the statement, along with my last guest, Mary Fiorito, and of course, Lila Rose and Abby Johnson and so many others. And Eric's here today. Eric, good to have you with me. Thanks for being with me.
Great to be here. And just a clarification, yeah. It's postrowfuture.com, and I'm one of the co-authors of this statement.
Oh, really?
So I'm very passionate about this issue. I worked very closely with Charlie Chemisi, yeah. Josh Brom from Equal Rights Institute, and Jonathan Van Meeren from the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform to put together this statement, because we looked at the landscape after Roe was overturned and saw a great need for the pro-life movement to be upfront in helping families at this moment. And we found a tremendous amount of support for some of the programs that we're calling for.
I think it's a brilliant idea. I mean, personally, I really do. I was saying to you during the breaks, you know, people have gotten desensitized when it comes to the life issue. It's a black and white for them. They're pro-life or they're not. If we had Roe forever, it's gone away. And now we see abortifacients. You know, we have this whole thing over Walmart and Gavin Newsom and a whole bunch of different stuff going on in the country. But I think the answer, or Walgreens, I should say, not Walmart, Walgreens, we should really be focusing on how to help mothers. You came up with this list of things. One, how's it being received, and what kind of attention have you gotten for it?
Well, the statement was originally highlighted in a New York Times exclusive on the day of the March for Life. So we were really pleased that, a forum that many of listeners will consider to be pretty left-wing,
yeah.
was willing to cover this statement and give it some notoriety. I've had interest from National Public Radio and 538, and there's other outlets like that are more mainstream or more lefty that are taking an interest in this.
Good.
You know, as well as outlets like American Conservative and First Things Journal. We've had a tremendous number of pro-life leaders sign this statement. People like Lila Rose from Live Action, Kristen Hawkins of Students for Life, Father Sheenan Bouquet of Human Life International, Joe Langfeld of Human Life Alliance, Brian Kemper from Stand True, and the list goes on. Catherine Foster from Americans United for Life, who, along with another signer, Kristen Day, has called for the government to make birth free, a policy that Ohio Senator J.D. Vance is now getting behind as well. We've had another couple of signers.
So how does that work? How does making birth free? That all expenses are covered?
That would be the idea.
Hospital stays, C-sections.
So that no parent ever has to worry about a massive hospital bill. But two other signers, Patrick Brown and Leah Labresco Sargent, have come out opposing some aspects of that and saying, wait, we appreciate the goals here, but here's a better way. Here's other plans we could put together to diminish the cost for middle class and wealthier families and really allow it to be free for poorer people. Because over 40% of abortions are eligible for Medicaid already. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see this kind of conversation happening. We're now seeing pro-life leaders talk about the best way to achieve some of these goals instead of focusing only on banning abortion, which is, of course, critical, but cannot be the end of the story.
I think people will get behind you, too, on this. I mean, they want to help women. If a woman chooses to have a child, wants to have a child, I think somebody who may be pro-death might also be open to maybe supporting that cause.
Well, that's part of what makes a proposal like this so promising, because it does resonate with many people in the Democratic Party or more liberal type of people, the idea of expanding some of these government programs. At the same time, I've been really impressed by how little pushback I've had from people on the right. One or two have accused me of becoming a socialist or something. I've asked them, what did you do with your COVID relief check? Did you send it back to the government or were you okay with that government program? You know, we've seen that government programs can lead to dependency. They can have counterproductive effects, but they can also be extremely effective. Look at Social Security, which effectively wiped out the problem of elderly poverty in our country. It's been a very effective program that almost nobody wants to see taken away anymore. So we want to see more of that kind of thing on behalf of the family and recognizing that there are budget limitations in certain states. You know, there's not an endless flow of money. We want to be careful not to disincentivize work or responsible parenthood. Stay-at-home parenthood is something we want to uplift as best we can. But there is much more that we can do with taxpayer dollars to fill the gap that we just cannot accommodate with purely private charity.
So where are we, though, as a nation? I don't know where people are in terms of temperament for this issue. I cherish this story all the time. This would be when Roe was underway. I remember having dinner with some people, and they said, "Oh, we love your show, man. It's our favorite. We listen all the time. You're great. We love the topics you cover. But I got to turn you off every once in a while." And I'm like, "You got to turn me off." I said, "Why? What do I say? What do I do? What is it that makes you turn the show off?" "Well, no, you know, it's nothing that you do that's wrong. It's just that, you know, well, I'm pro-life. And when you talk about life issues, you know, I don't listen to that because, you know, I'm pro-life." Mm. So, I mean, they have their mindset that, okay, I know the position. I don't need to listen, you know. And it's the same with pro-choice people. I mean, you are locked into that particular camp. Yeah. And people grew, as I said, a little tired over the years, I think. Now that the Dobbs decision has taken place, Where are the people? Is there a different passion? I guess the scales are, whose favor are they weighing in? Is life now really beginning to win, as Mike Pence says, or is it going to be a perpetual kind of back and forth for quite a while?
I think we're in a moment of extreme chaos with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and it's really impossible to say where the people really are. We've seen some tremendous pushback against the pro-life movement. We lost some major ballot initiatives in the last election, and we're seeing a battle royale forming in the state of Ohio, where there's another one of these initiatives. Yeah. The people of Minnesota just passed a horrible pro-abortion bill. We see what's happening in Illinois, what's happening with Walgreens and CVS when it comes to medication abortion. So we're in a really chaotic moment. Hmm. But I think, you know, it doesn't so much matter, you know, where people are really at right now. I think we have to be proactive and be fighting for these types of policies. And I think it's having an effect. I mean, take a look at Governor Mike Dunleavy in Alaska. He's recently called for Alaska to extend Medicaid coverage for new moms from 60 days to a full year. Governor Tate Reeves of Mississippi, the state that brought the case that overturned Roe v. Wade, is saying, now that we've done this, now that we can save these babies, this is a beautiful thing, Mississippi moms are facing more pressure. We have to love them. We have to provide for them, even if it sometimes makes us a little philosophically uncomfortable with our, you know, small government ideology.
Right, right.
And J.D. Vance, as I said, supporting the idea of free birth. There's a legislator in Texas calling for property tax relief for each additional child. If you have 10 kids, you pay no property tax.
I have no problem. Yeah, I mean, I don't see why people would have a problem with this. We give, what, $530 million to Planned Parenthood every year? Is that what the federal government does? Why not give that to some of these crisis pregnancy centers now in states where abortion is no longer legal?
That's right. We can. And again, spending more tax dollars does not mean more elaborate government programs necessarily. It can simply mean providing tax money to pregnancy centers, which many states do. And it has a profound effect on helping mothers. You know, child care classes that they need. Parental leave is a big issue. Flexible work hours. Mm-hmm. So many women would have another child, a child that they want, mm-hmm. if only circumstances were different. So many abortions are sought by women who don't really want them, but they can't make that next rent check. Or they're feeling pressured by a man who's not willing to pay prenatal child support as may be required by the law. So there's so much that we could do with policy to make a difference and reduce the abortion pressure that leads to so many unwanted abortions.
So that's such a good point. My guest today, Eric Scheidler, if you want to join us, I only have him for a little, maybe 10, 15 more minutes. I'll open the phones when we come back. The number here to get in, 888-914-9149. Love to hear from you, get your perspective. You feel free to ask your questions. Eric and I were talking. He said, "I love Q&A, right? You love it. You said you'd rather do that, give a talk, right?
That's right.
Well, we'll take a few calls for you on the other side. Feel free to dial in. The number here, 888-914-9149. Our conversation will continue with more right after this. Stay with us. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, so good to be with you. I'm going to grab a couple of your calls here. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking today to the co-author of a very important document, a statement that's getting a lot of buzz. It's called Building a Post-Roe Future. I would encourage you, and this is what you think, well, what can I do about this whole fight for life? Go sign it. Go and check it out. See if this statement aligns with your personal values. I want you to sign something before you read it. And then put your signature on it, okay? Matt, did you say your signature's there? No. Okay. 877, the number to get in, 888-914-9149. Before I grab these calls very quickly, I read through this, and there's nothing that I find personally objectionable. Well, how many signatures do you have now, and how can people sign? How hard is that to do?
We have about 1,000 signatures. We first shopped it around the pro-life movement.
Triple that.
Yeah, we'd be wonderful, too.
Just today. Yeah. We should do far more than that. You should have 100,000 signatures there.
Well, they keep coming in.
A couple million.
Yeah.
Well, you know, people are probably hearing about this for the first time. Mm-hmm. PostRoeFuture.com. Take just a second. Go check it out. Let your voice be heard. And just before I take the call, very quickly, just summarize what it's all about for those just joining us.
We are calling on the pro-life movement to go beyond what we've accomplished in so many states so wonderfully of limiting or even banning abortion and providing policies, including the spending of government money, that will help women to resist that abortion pressure, the economic and social pressures that push them so often to abortions they don't even want. We can save lives with these kind of policies. It's no good to ban abortion and then have women flood across to the next state where it's legal, or bring in blackmail abortion pills, you know, black market abortion pills. Right. You know, we've got to actually provide help.
Ginger in Baltimore, good afternoon. You're on the air with Eric Scheidler. Welcome.
Hi, nice to talk with you.
Hey, likewise.
So I'm wondering why you're looking for all these variety of government programs instead of reinstating the personal exemption and have it revert to the level that it was in the 60s and include all of our children as human beings, including the unborn children, on our income tax returns.
Well, you know, I want to be clear. We're not calling for specific policy proposals. You know, we're not endorsing this bill or that bill. We're calling for generally broad policy goals. So what you're describing, ways to change the tax code so that you get a benefit for children, perhaps before they're even born, that's absolutely in line with this. In fact, one of the six principles we're calling for is to expand and enforce the existing prenatal child support laws. That could include a state or even the federal government modifying the tax code so as to allow a deduction for an unborn child. I would absolutely be open to that. It's a great idea. And just one example of how these principles could be implemented in practice.
Yeah, because one of your points is the child tax credit, right?
That's right. The child tax credit in 2018 alone lifted 3 million children out of poverty. So that's a way that the tax code was used to help people. And when we lift families out of poverty, they're less likely to have an abortion. We know that American women are having fewer children than they want to have. And part of how they're doing that is abortion. Yeah. If we can make it easier for families to say yes to another child in various ways, we will save lives from abortion.
Amen. James has been waiting a long time. He's in San Francisco. He's got a comment for you. Hi, James.
Hi, Drew. How you doing?
Great. We're hanging in there. Thanks for your patience. Go right ahead.
Yeah, Drew, I just wanted to share my opinion on, you know, I live here in San Francisco Bay Area, and Gavin Newsom, I've been following him since he was mayor, and he's just so phony. I mean, he calls himself Catholic, and I've talked to many priests around here, and he's kind of distanced himself away from the church now. Mm-hmm. But it's not just him. He's trying to get rid of Walgreens in California now because they're not giving out an abortion pill, mailing it out to women who want it. And not only that, there's a lot of other local politicians that are Catholic, some I personally know, that don't that aren't even standing up for pro-life. And I just can't believe that a lot of these people are, you know, politicians are that are Catholic won't even come out and say anything. It just amazes me.
Well, James, I share your passion. I'm the same way. For your governor, Gavin Newsom, he claims to be Catholic. He said, I think it was Monday, he made this statement that he's going to cut ties with Walgreens for following the drugstore chain's announcement that they're going to you know, break state laws by selling abortion pills in nearly two dozen states. Crazy.
It's scandalous that Governor Newsom of California is trying to force abortion on other states and other governors throughout the country. And I think that makes it all the more important for us to support people like Governor Reeves in Mississippi and Governor Dunleavy in Alaska, who are trying to use government policy to help families. And I think we're going to really see over the next decade or so the difference between the pro-life states and the pro-abortion states. And those states in the middle, the purple states like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, we're going to see whether they will recognize the victories that we're achieving in pro-life states. So I think we can see, we're going to see a pushback to the Gavin Newsoms and the J.B. Pritzkers as we achieve success and make life better for families in these states where we are really helping them.
Here's what Newsom said. California won't be doing business with Walgreens or any company that cowers to the extremist, I guess that's you, right, and puts women's lives at risk. He says, we're done. Okay, that's the California government. I got to follow up with a question for you because you were protesting against Walgreens last time you were here. What's happening on that front and your thoughts?
Well, I can't tell you how gratifying it is to see Walgreens confirm that our direct action is having a difference. They've announced this week that they're not going to be providing those medication abortion pills in 20 states, including states where abortion's legal, in part because of these protests. So the protests are continuing. We had one just this past weekend along with our friends at Students for Life. In fact, in Aurora, Illinois, we protested a CVS on one corner and a Walgreens on the other, kitty corner to each other, a doubleheader protest. So they're going to keep coming. We're going to keep writing letters. We're going to keep signing petitions, and we're going to keep achieving victories if we hang together.
I'm glad Walgreens decided at least not to go down the route they were going to go. We got to pray that they just don't dispense these at all. So keep up your good work. Let's grab another caller. Northern Nevada. Stan's been waiting to talk to you. Hi, Stan.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. My hat's off to your guest here. I want to sign that petition. I pray every day that all the states will become pro-life states, and now I know what I can do. But I just don't think abortion should be considered a health care issue. It is not health care. Right. And I think that's lead to a modern kind of a slavery of, like, in the South, when we had the Civil War, it was about owning another man's, one man owning another man's labor, his family, and everything else. And that's what this new slavery is, that you own that. You own the family in that. I don't think they should count that because they're robbing people that really need legitimate health care because you pile on that transgender operations and you pile on that these prep drugs so people can continue doing unnatural sexual behaviors and at a cost, it takes away from people that are very vulnerable, you know, the people that need that care.
Sam, thanks for calling. I'll let Eric respond. We only have a couple minutes left.
Yeah, well, you know, when it comes to abortion, I think one of the avenues where we can start to achieve some common ground with people more on the left of the political spectrum is by pointing out to them that abortion doesn't do what they think it does. It does not improve the lives of American families or American women. You know, look at a company like Amazon. They're telling their employees, yeah, we'll pay for you to leave, to fly out of a pro-life state and go to a pro-abortion state and get your abortion, get you back on the warehouse floor as fast as possible. How is Amazon helping that family? Yep. Maybe she really wants to have another child, and Amazon is pushing her to get abortion. Yep. J.B. Pritzker is pushing poor women to get abortions instead of offering them the help that they really need. Yeah. And it can be devastating for a woman's life to undergo this. This is we cannot make abortion the price that women have to pay to enjoy the blessings of liberty.
Hey, I got a question for you. I just typed in postrowfuture.com. That's your website, right?
Postrowfuture.com.
Because I want to go ahead and sign this petition. Postrowfuture.com. And I'm not getting through for some reason. How do you spell Roe, right? It's R-O-E, right?
R-O-E.
How do you spell it?
P-O-S-T-R-O-E.
Future.
F-U-T-U-R-E.com.
Yeah, well, try it.
Postrowfuture.com.
Maybe it's my computer. I don't know. I mean, just put it in the URL and say, can't reach that site.
Oh, I'm like, I've got it right here on my phone.
All right, well, then I'm going to have to try a different laptop. Here, this is what that's the URL. I'll show you my screen. You see that? Isn't that weird? So if anyone's having difficulty, try a different browser maybe, or try something different.
Well, get rid of the www and see what happens.
Maybe that's it. Final thought. I only have about a minute left. There's lots of calls, but I really want to encourage people to sign that. You've got about 30 seconds, so please go to postrowfuture.com.
PostrowFuture.com. Sign on. Show that not only to help women, but to show America the pro-life movement cares. Yeah. So often it's said we don't care about babies once they're born. We do. We care about babies' moms. We want to make their lives better.
Well, Eric, thank you. We can check you out, and I hope everyone will go. We'll link over to that so you can get your signature. Let's double and triple the numbers he has, all right? I'll be back.